decarbonizing the energy sector of modern day will be one of the most challenging obstacles of our time, but it will also present an opportunity for pioneers to achieve the impossible. Energy demand is increasing, and so is the need to produce that energy sustainably so we can reach our net zero goals. This is the Core Knowledge Podcast, where we sit down with the leaders and innovators in the geothermal energy space, tackling the challenges of modern day in order to make geothermal everywhere a reality for tomorrow. From shallow to deep, heat to electricity, and even healthcare to agriculture, we will bring to light the many benefits of geothermal. Join us as we journey across the globe to bring awareness to the heat beneath our feet in order to power the future.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Core Knowledge Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Sestari, and this is the show where we're on a quest to bring awareness to the heat beneath our feet in order to power the future. And it's a pleasure to bring you yet another episode on this wonderful channel where we're going to do just that, bring awareness to the heat beneath our feet, but in a way that we're going to cover the entire globe this time. Usually we're talking about a certain country, a certain region, or a certain technology, even maybe a certain use case for geothermal. But today we're going to kind of be looking at the whole swath of geothermal, where it applies around the world and the different ways it applies, and just sort of what we're seeing today and then the future outlook. And what I'm referring to, for those that don't know, is the recent report that was put out by the International Energy Agency, which was on the future of geothermal. So looking at sort of current state, past state, and then looking into the future for geothermal in a lot of different arenas, investment, policy, technologies, different industries, involvement, and how do we help advance this, regions, use cases, the electricity versus heat. So really just, as I mentioned, a very large take on the geothermal industry and a very thorough and well done report. And so I have the pleasure today of sitting with Haimi Bahar, who's with the IEA, senior analyst, and was in charge of a part of organizing and helping put together this report in an incredible effort from so many actors. And you can see who those were if you download the report. I'll make sure to put the link in the show notes. But without any further ado, Haimi, it's great to finally make this happen. Thank you so much for your willingness and patience on scheduling and coordinating. It's truly an honor to have you on the show today to get this chance to talk to you.
Thank you very much, Nick, for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here to talk about geothermal, something that I'm learning every day still today after doing this massive report and engaging with a lot of stakeholders, and very happy to be here.
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, let's kick it off. Give the listeners a brief overview of yourself, your background, and how you came to be with the IEA, and then also, well, you know, how did you get roped into geothermal specifically?
So I've been here at the IEA for the last 13 years. Before that, I was at the OECD, and then my background is like I studied political science. Actually, I'm not an engineer. Then afterwards, I studied energy economics and specifically renewable energy. So I'm not an engineer, I'm not a scientist per se. But my focus was always to understand the markets and policies, how we can make these technologies come to the market. One of the parts that I focused on doing my studies and a bit doing my work is to focus on the technology policy as well. So that I'm really interested in this kind of policies that can make the technologies happen, what kind of support we do. So geothermal is one of the technology that I during my first years at the IEA, wanted to do in detail when we do the forecast and policy analysis. I've actually done a lot of analysis during my young years or junior years at the IEA on geothermal, trying to understand the technologies, different types of power generation technologies or drilling, heat part, and so on and so forth. And then we basically did a big, I wouldn't say pause, but in terms of the priorities, we basically doing the forecast or working on the geothermal, but not as detailed because we had a lot of other things to cover. Then the report was a refocus of the geothermal, which will bring a lot of new things for the IA in the future as well, and maybe we can touch upon those later, IA versus geothermal and so on and so forth.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So it's it's interesting sometimes how the tie and the you know path and the avenue lead to various perspectives, which I think is great that the perspective is not always the same. Whoever's coming into geothermal, they're coming from different perspectives and trying to approach it from a different angle, solving for a different problem, which I love, and love that the IA incorporated. When you read the list, you know, it's all these people from many, many different backgrounds and perspectives. And so as with any industry, this does not just apply to geothermal. It's great. It's how things truly get advanced and done is by having many different eyes and many different perspectives looking at the same, quote unquote problem, but sort of trying to find solutions in many different ways to put the whole picture together. So that's really awesome. So this report, let's just start first with the high level overview of, you mentioned you had kind of other higher priorities. You were covering geothermal in some degree. What sort of kicked off, the IEA's, sort of rethinking around, hey, we should put together this future of geothermal was, what was kind of demanding that or calling for that, of why the IEA sort of put that on their list of to-dos?
There are actually multiple things that is happening. First of all, I think the momentum that we saw over the last couple of years, maybe last 3-4 years in the geothermal industry, I think we have been following that, not that closely, but at least we have been following. And then there was, I think, 2 or 3 important things happened. I think the first one is the firewall milestones. I think they're quite important, for not only for the IA, but for entire geothermal industry. That's one. The second one, I think our involvement in the shale revolution in the United States as an agency, one of the first to pick this up in more than a decade ago, I think it was 2010, a special edition that we did at the IA focusing on just this, golden age of gas, that we basically promoted this. we promoted it. We wrote about this, what is coming up, and put it in our models. I think there was a lot of knowledge base to understand from the seed what will happen. Sorry, that was that. Plus, I think there was a big momentum in the European Union about putting geothermal back onto the agenda under the Hungary presidency, which basically led to many high-level dialogues around the table to be able to have something on geothermal, because everybody talks about wind and solar PV. They are extremely important. We also talk about integration of those sources. We talk about decarbonization of heat and industry, which are a difficult part. And geothermal is at the center of these, at least in terms of capability. So that basically, this combination of these led us to decide to do this report and a big workshop at the IA, which you couldn't make it, but it was a quite big achievement, I think, to put the industry together a few months before the report launch.
Yeah, no, that's great. So it's an interesting, gives us a little bit of foundation background. It's interesting that it's sort of many different things, but I love seeing it from where the IEA sits, which is obviously, international view. And so you're seeing a lot of different angles and how things are playing in different countries and areas. Interesting about the gas. I did not know that you guys were sort of at that. Yeah, 2010. I mean, that was before anybody knew what was actually really coming. People were sort of speculating certain things. But gosh, looking at where we are today in 2025, and at that point, yeah, pretty wild. So I hopefully that's where we're headed with the geothermal. So in 10 years, we can say the same thing as we reconnect in 10 years. But yeah, I think it's interesting always to hear, because there's so many different variables, governments, there's drivers for, there's incentives all over the place. So I just love that this was high graded and put together. And I mean, the amount of effort is clearly seen. If anyone who's opened the report or looked at it, this is not something that the IEA, did halfway or kind of thought about as a secondary item. This is a very, very thorough and inclusive report, as Hamie mentioned, is that there was a lot of stakeholders that were questioned and asked and workshopped around. So this is really, really awesome. So before we kind of hit some of the high level things that I would love to pull out for the listeners, just from your perspective, being kind of on a overseer, pulling in stakeholders, kind of being, you know, putting this report together, what are some of the things that maybe before you started this, even though you had looked at geothermal some, that you didn't know, or maybe you got a new appreciation for, or a new perspective after doing this report?
So I think there are a couple of things to mention, but maybe before going into that, for the International Energy Agency, this was also an interesting project I would like to highlight, because we had to put together a team from different departments which usually don't have a common topic to work around. So we had to put together oil and gas team, we had to put together the power team, heat team, renewables team, integration team, and so on and so forth, to be able to deliver this project. I think this is on its own an important facilitator to work together with those colleagues around the building that we learn from each other. But going back to your question, maybe directly answering for me, it was the startup community which impressed me a lot. I did not know that there is so many technology developers focusing on a specific area of the geothermal, from material science to drilling to earth science, I mean, so on and so forth, that I did not know that these small companies with a lot of seed funding and venture capital and so on and so forth, mainly in the United States, are focusing on geothermal. I was totally not aware of this. I knew few companies, but the depth of it, at least where we see today, is incredible.
Yeah,
and I think this gives the signal that we may have the same revolution that we talked about in 2010. We call it golden age of gas with golden rules and regulations at the time. But I think it's an interesting way of looking at it. At the time, there was a large oil companies who were behind this this revolution of oil and gas companies, the large ones or the independent ones. But this time, we are talking about a much smaller community with small companies, like real tech startups type of view, which is, I think, fit for the world that we are living today. In my opinion, and I find this very impressive and very positive for the development of this industry in general.
Yeah, no, it is a pretty impressive. You know, I've been incredibly blown away. Obviously, having this podcast has given me a chance to see some of that I probably never would have gotten to see. But getting to peel back the layers and see how many innovative and just passionate people that are applying something, whether it's from their background or industry or just trying to solve the problem of geothermal. And even talking to some of them, how they say there needs to be even more than what there already is, which is, shows you the potential that they see in this resources, that there's room for more. We're doing a great job, but there's even more potential for more startups and hopefully big companies to take it a little more seriously and enter into the picture as we get further down this geothermal decade or revolution, as you call it. So definitely a huge piece of it for sure.
And I think one important surprise for me, which I mentioned this in the closing remarks of the workshop, that we put together 110 different stakeholders here at the IEA from all around the world. It was incredibly experienced, first of all, but the big surprise that I had for the preparation of the workshop, which was we had chats with a lot of the stakeholders before the workshop, for the preparation, and during the workshop, and even after the workshop. And for me, the most impressive thing is that a community that is so technical, that is doing the work, which is extremely technical, scientific, very complicated in many ways, trying to basically go through this innovation cycle, let's put it this way, and try to solve a lot of very technical and difficult problems, can communicate very straightforward way to the stakeholders. This was impressive because I worked in my career with a lot of stakeholders from different renewable energy technology industry, And usually IEA is trying to help them to simplify the messages so that policymakers can understand mm-hmm. and can act on them. And I found geothermal community not only passionate about what they are doing, this is very clear, but also very straightforward in the way that they communicate what needs to be done and what are the challenges, without burying the thoughts on these technical difficulties or challenges, which should be a part of conversation within that community. But I was surprised how every stakeholder, when they made intervention during the workshop, it was easily understandable by all of us within the IEA and government representatives around the table, which is quite important. They are the audience here. I find this quite impressive, and it was quite surprising for me. And I said it in my closing remarks very openly that I'm impressed by this communication style. And I think that's why I'm even more hopeful for the development of this industry, because of this communication style, which is quite strategic and clear.
Yeah, no, that's big. That's actually great. I mean, thank you for bringing that up. That's something that you probably we don't really think about often, or you don't always think about top of your mind when you think about what do you need to do as an industry to advance or to, you know, create a space of a, you know, growth and revolution of sorts. Normally doesn't come up in the topics of conversation. It's normally all about, you know, technology success, scale, financing costs, you know, the normal stuff. But that's a huge piece that I wasn't even thinking about. So that's awesome that you got to witness it in person at that event, not just by, you know, secondhand knowledge. You got to actually witness it yourself. So that's awesome. A little bit on that, we can go towards policy first, just because I know you got involved in some of that, and that's obviously a topic globally. But I, from the perspective of the IEA and this report, what are you seeing in some of with this communication style, which I have witnessed some too in the U.S. with some of the local governors and governments? You know, are we seeing things are slow sometimes with policy? I get that it takes multiple rounds, multiple times of, you know, having that conversation. But, you know, from doing this report and then even after this report, because there's been quite a bit of activity, what have you seen on the global picture with regards to policy? Is it very different across the board? Are there some similar things trying to be discussed? Is there collaboration across governments? You know, some of that sort of just policy picture that you got to see and are seeing now post-report release.
Sure. So first of all, the first impact, I can say very clearly that we received so many requests from the governments to talk, they wanted to understand a lot more. And we did a lot of presentations, a lot of meetings, following one-to-one meetings with a lot of stakeholders. And I'm not talking about the stakeholders that were here in the workshop. I'm not talking about companies. I'm talking about like people who want to learn about this. So I think on its own, that's a big impact. I think another big impact at the European level, I will say, the European Commission president mentioned this in her speech. Of course, we are not the only ones that is influencing that, but I think our report made an incredible contribution to raise the awareness of the European Commission's team and around it. And we know it made a big influence because we received feedback. So I think it's quite important feedback, and it's included, explicitly mentioned in the European documents as an option to be considered. I think these are important high-level awareness that needs to be done. And what I learned during my career here at the IEA, this when I was junior, I did not really realize the importance of how we can influence the high-level people so that they can push the agenda forward. I thought that if you can do technical people can do this, but it's not the case. There are so many competing technologies, projects, priorities, and so on and so forth. You really need to make people aware of certain technology, and IEA has a big role on this. Our role is this. Our role is not the lobbying for any technology. Our role is to raise awareness with the pluses and minuses of every technology. I think the report did that very well. touching upon almost every single aspect of the geothermal technology, especially next geothermal technology. So I think the big influence is that, and I'm seeing a change of interest. Only the number of requests that we receive to know more, to understand more, and so on and so forth. So I think it will be important. These things take time, as you say. It will take a couple of years for things to be realized. But the momentum is there. Policy momentum is there. Technology momentum has been there, but the policy momentum is there. And I see a lot of things changing in terms of the permitting, in terms of facilitating certain processes, and so on and so forth, which is basically basic of the deployment.
Yeah, no, that's great. And before we switch back to more of the report stuff, you mentioned in the beginning, we'd love to, if there's additional to what you just mentioned, kind of the impact for the IEA. Like, let's talk about, I mean, the industry, obviously, this report's big time. This is great for us geothermal enthusiasts like myself, those that work in it, the startups, you know, all the community, as well as governments and local development corporations, you know, economic development, all that stuff. But for the IEA, you kind of briefly touched on, you know, the meetings, the interest level. But what does a report like this? Yes, we're talking about geothermal today, but obviously you do this for other energy, you know, sources and resources. What does a report like this, you know, mean for the IEA and open up for the IEA in terms of future within the geothermal space or just this arena of you know, energy?
Sure. What it does basically, the work that we put together, especially the technical infrastructure that we created to do this work, doesn't go to the shelf after this. So it basically embedded into our modeling exercises, embedded into our, so that's on its own basically, which was not there, which is today there. So you will expect IEA to be from future to be more explicit about geothermal, meaning that in our data, in our representation of the renewable forecast, for instance, we will be much more pointing up because now we are confident that we have the necessary infrastructure for the analysis. We basically understood a little bit where things can go. Obviously, we will look at the policy environment challenges and so on and so forth to make a call whether how much of this will be realized. That's the difficult part. Of course, things are slow. Things are not that fast as we speak today, especially all around the world. In certain regions, it's faster than the others. But the goal is to basically, in every IEA aspect of the work, even the technology innovation program that we have, you will see more explicit analysis or mention or sections on geothermal. That's on its own, I think, an important change for the IEA.
Yeah, no, that's great. No, that's awesome. So, I mean, all those big reports that already get updated once a year now will have a big component of geothermal, and like you said, it won't be because, you know, there's been some out there, not IEA or any others, but there's, you know, for a long time it has felt like geothermal is in the other category or it's not really known of how to form, you know, it's just because that's not anyone's fault or any lack of, it's just like you said, the work wasn't there. There wasn't necessarily the groundwork or the input from all stakeholders to get a handle on what are the inputs, outputs, how do we forecast it. So I mean, that's huge. I think that alone, just kind of starting this system for the next few years and sort of building upon it, I'm sure there's a feedback loop that you and the IEA work on with different stakeholders, and so you'll get to see as things evolve and change. Because it was interesting in the report, I think you talked about on the policy front how other renewable energy sources, there's like 100 countries, I think, that have you know, some sort of policy supporting that, in, you know, something that's incentivizing development, and then I think geothermal was somewhere in the category of like 30. So it was just crazy to see the, even with momentum we've been seeing in the recent years, the disparity still, you know, exists between, you know, geothermal kind of still have room to grow, which is positive, right? That's not a negative. It's just kind of still showing you solar and wind have been out there for, you know, a little while ahead of, well, I won't say that. You could take that the wrong way. They haven't been around longer than geothermal. They've just been kind of getting some of that support and things faster or a little bit, you know, sooner than what geothermal had originally. So
I think
definitely a lot to see.
This is a very important point, but when you are into this industry like yourself or many others, I think you distance yourself a little bit from the basics at the high level, because the reason why this was not happening and the reason why there are only 25, 30 countries were supporting that, because actually for policymakers' perception, this was not an option.
Yeah.
because they were told and or they were reading that geothermal only is available in Iceland, Indonesia, Japan, parts of the United States, Turkey, and Iceland, or whatever, like these 10 countries. Yep. And then in most of those countries, it's already exploited, it's over. So you know what I mean? So it's that perception change, which IEA report, I think, is successfully achieved, at least partially successfully achieved. That changing that perception to make these policymakers or high-level policy people to actually consider it as an option is a big step.
Yes.
I know I'm talking about very basic stuff, but you need to put yourself in the shoes of the policymakers. There are so many options.
Yeah.
There are so many ways to achieve a goal. And there are very competing technologies or interests for a country. I think just be able to know more about in general in an understandable manner for those that geothermal can be an option is is very, very important start. And I think with all the stakeholders' help, we are able to at least initiate this process, which is an important part of the discussion, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, that's a great point you bring up, because as I'm talking, it is true. If you're in it and you've been around this, you obviously know that geothermal does not exist in a finite. You understand the concept of what the word geothermal means, which is that it's everywhere. It's just now you get into the nuance of, you know, where can you do it economically. But that's the conversation you have after you do the awareness conversation. And as the IEA's report also did, which I, you know, briefly mentioned in the intro, is we did not only focus on electricity, because I know that's an important part of our global society. We need, you know, we need electricity, we need power, but it's also the heating aspect of both residential, industrial, but then all the other use cases that you brought up in the report, you know, that are all about agricultural uses, you know, all these, you know, the list goes on forever. But I think, as you mentioned, it brings, then someone can come to the IEA and say, I'd love to talk more about this drying process you're talking about. Like, I don't really understand. You know, that's an option. And then you're like, yeah, it's an option. And then, as you said, then that can bring the loop of the conversation back to policy. And they can say, hey, we don't necessarily have power as an option, you know, from a policy standpoint, but we have whatever it might be, residential, you know, agricultural use cases. So no, I think that's a huge thing, if nothing else, that the report allowed for a room for a lot of conversation and just more awareness around things, which is what we're hoping to do here on the podcast as well. Just one step at a time, just try to slowly bring more awareness. So, you talked about the golden age of gas, and we talked about the oil and gas industry. And now we're talking about geothermal. You talked about how many teams you had to pull together within the IEA to do this, which I think is unique and really cool to see what it took to get this report done. But let's specifically the oil and gas industry. You bring it up in the report. Some that have been around for a while know, obviously, I work oil and gas. Those who have, you know, you understand the similarities, you understand the differences and how they cross over. But for what the report brought up and for what you, you know, have seen and learned, you know, what exactly is this role that the oil and gas sector can play, and how big of a role do you think they can play, and do you think they are key? And without them, do you think that geothermal reaches the potential that it truly has?
I think the most important point about oil and gas industry, obviously, the experience that they have since 2010, maybe even before, it's kind of incredible achievement in terms of the developing techniques and cost reductions and so on and so forth. I think that's the knowledge and know-how that oil and gas industry is extremely important for geothermal. Of course, there are some differences between the two, but I think as a role model in terms of what has been achieved, it's incredible. I mean, it changed the United States status from an energy importer to an energy exporter.
Yeah.
So I think it's a massive change. And this happened over the years through a lot of investment in innovation, a lot of opportunities that is created by the government to go and try and do, and a lot of support around it. So I think geothermal is part of this drilling business, obviously, And there is a lot of different ways of approaching this from the oil and gas industry. And I've been following oil and gas industry's involvement in the renewable energy business for a very long time. One word, it has been disappointing over the last decades. Disappointing, not in terms of, I'm not using this word as a they made mistakes or so on and so forth. I'm using this word because the knowledge and the cash flow and the financial capabilities that they have is actually can make a big difference in any type of technology that exists. However, the big difference is that these technologies, and still today, most of the renewable energy technologies cannot give them the profit margins that they need to return to their shareholders. Mm-hmm. And when you look at this from this perspective, you sit down and say, yeah, they're right. I mean, they are quoted in the stock market. They have a lot of shareholders. They want to return profits, and they want to do. The shareholders want to see those profits. This is what they want. Beyond any type of discussion. And I've been saying this for a very long time for the renewable energy industry, and many people who are fond of the renewable energy world don't like me when I say this. But I say this: if you want to be a mature industry that is standing on their feet without subsidies, without any support, and so on and so forth, the most important thing that you need to understand is how to operate in a profitable way, to return profits to your investors in a consistent way throughout the years, regardless of the economic situation. I'm saying this, of course, you cannot make profit maybe 1 year because there's an economic crisis, but next year you make up for it. And people come back to me always and they say, but fossil fuel industry is being subsidized for... Yes, it's true, it's been subsidized. I'm not talking about that. But the most important point is that they created a business model mm-hmm. beyond these subsidies. We need to accept this. Yeah. Efficiency, how to run big projects, how to invest in innovation, targeted innovation that can be commercialized. I mean, these are the things that cannot be ignored. I've been working on renewable energy for a very long time. But yeah. I accept this. It's ignoring this will be a big mistake. And I think that's the most important point that I'm trying to make here. I made this point not for geothermal at the time, for wind and solar PV. Now the prices are cheaper than any fossil fuel option in the world, and so on and so forth. But when you look at the profitability of these companies, still it's not even those technologies are not attractive for that much for fossil fuel big players, because it's not returns are still not the level that they will accept, their shareholders will accept. So I think in that sense that the oil and gas industry's business model and understanding and perspective, geothermal industry's culture obviously is coming from that. Like most of the people that I met for the geothermal industry understands this concept. It's a big plus. For those who are coming from solar PV, wind or bioenergy or hydropower, don't have this concept. Let's be honest with ourselves. So I think even that influence of which I saw in a lot of the stakeholder meetings, we need to achieve this price if we want to be in this market, period.
Yeah.
This influenced us to focus our analysis on a target price. What would happen if geothermal industry achieves a target price? We did not talk about how to achieve that target price. There are many reports out there how to do that.
Yeah.
We wanted to show the world, if you achieve that, what will mean for the renewable energy system in the world and what geothermal can play.
Yeah, no, that's a very key piece, and thank you for elaborating on that. It's a misconception sometimes that it's like that you do anything at all at whatever cost just because you need to get to some goal or net zero thing. But it's at the end of the day, that's not how businesses run. It's not how they operate, especially if they have demand from outside investors, stakeholders, shareholders, whatever it may be. There's more to the picture than that. So I think that's a really important piece that you brought up. So I think the last question that I'll sort of pose to you before we do our wrap-up questions is on the investment side of things. I know this is nuanced and we could go on probably for a long time, but just on a you know, talking about, you know, if we achieve this price, what we've seen in investment today and what the sort of projections are, you know, by 2050, you know, in the report and just as you've interacted with stakeholders, is this something, you know, a lot of countries do it differently. In the US, with the startup culture, as you mentioned, there's been a lot of equity from venture capital, private capital, stuff like that, which is not bad. We need that. And then other areas, you've got banks creating sort of funds that are helping, you know, in the Philippines and some of the Asian region, as well as Central America. You know, I guess for me and for you and your perspective on doing the report, you know, what does the investment picture need to look like moving forward? Does it, you know, needs to be both and, you know, kind of what are you seeing in terms of those drivers of on the, you know, how much, you know, numbers sound cool and sound like a lot, but, you know, what's the scale we really need from an investment piece to actually make this thing a reality?
So, if we basically agree that, okay, with this new technology, geothermal can be everywhere, check. If we agree that we are on a cost decline trajectory and there's a lot of potential to go down to, you know, $70 to $50 per megawatt hour for electricity and similar amounts for heat, if we establish that, then the rest is how we are going to raise the money for this. Because you unlock 800 gigawatts of electricity potential by 2050, as mentioned in the report, from 14 gigawatts today. That's a massive change. And this massive change means, I don't remember the exact number, but billions of investment, which is not a lot actually for, if you look at the overall energy investment, but it will make geothermal 15% of the global electricity demand growth or around 9% of global electricity generation from 0.2% today. Right? So that's a massive change. So, and I think the most important thing is that the money from the government sides need to be on the table for this initial process. This is what we mentioned in the report. So this cannot be achieved, especially for the first gigawatts of project. I'm not saying megawatts of project, but gigawatts of project. This technology needs support, period. And this support needs to be as quickly accessible as possible in order to achieve these cost reductions in many parts of the world, not just in the United States or some parts of the United States. It has to happen in a way that is spread out around the world so that we collect these experiences. And for this, you mentioned very correctly, United States is a different environment in terms of the investment. While Europe, government's role is actually much bigger because governments have more capabilities, especially at the European Union level, to invest in these technologies through different development banks, or let's say the banks that are managed by the European countries together, that can create a lot of opportunities. So Europe will be that. And maybe for the developing countries on emerging economies, it will be around the development financing that could initially put the money down to take the risk. So somebody needs to take the risk. If there is no risk-taking environment such as venture capital, seed investment like in the United States, which is a very unique environment, to be very honest with you, this kind of stuff, quite advanced, I think that the government's role becomes very big. Which is also challenging because before the investors go in, governments will go in, and then governments have a lot of competing interests, right? So, so that's why I think the important point here to convince the governments to at least create an investment picture both on the reducing the investment costs of these technologies by providing cash, but at the same time creating demand for these technologies so that in both sides, we support those, like we did for solar PV at the time or wind at the time. So I think this should be a similar structure. And the enabling environment, which is infrastructure, is also quite important. I think we should be able to invest in those.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's a great, great summary. And as nuanced as it is, and it's very complicated, obviously, for the listeners out there, I'm trying to cover it in a very, you know, nice high level view of what we've seen in the IEA's report. But obviously, if you're interested in that sort of thing, you can really dive deep. And there's a lot of instruments of financing that other industries have used for a long time and done as ways of getting projects, big, large projects, you know, financed that are unique and not traditional in the sense of some of the stuff that Hamie and I were talking about. So it's a evolving space and one that needs obviously continued evolution and you know, continued involvement from all stakeholders. But that's awesome. And man, time flies. I feel like this, we could talk about stuff for a long, long time because there's so much in here and it's just such a great report that, that the IE put together, but also just simply, you know, the industry is in an exciting place right now. And it's just a lot happening around the world. But Amy, thank you for, you know, giving us this sort of high level thought, some of your inputs behind the scenes of this report and kind of how it was put together. It's a very, very honestly great conversation. And I learned something and I'm sure the listeners did. But before I let you go, I always ask every guest three rapid fire questions that are not topic related. So these are just general life questions. So the first one I always ask is a piece of advice that you would give to yourself or to someone who's in university and maybe doesn't know exactly what they want to do with their career.
Wow, that's more difficult than any other question I will say definitely whatever you do, focus on the quantitative part. That's, I think I will give, like, even if you do the policy, focus on the quantitative component for the university people, because it will be used for anywhere, any field that will be in the future.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's great. And then number two is, across your career, what's one of your highlight projects or locations that you got to work just in general?
My big highlight, to be able to be hired at the IEA, to be honest with you. So it was always because I studied energy and then I really wanted to work at the IEA because I've been following the work. And then through my university that I studied, I received a lot of contacts for me to help and so on and so forth. And I think this was my moment of the career to first understand my university's power, which is Johns Hopkins University in the United States. Mm-hmm. I studied in School of Advanced International Studies there in Washington, D.C. So I mean, I think choice of school for the studies is quite important. And then that led me to this kind of IEA journey.
That's awesome. Wow, that's so cool. It's also cool to hear about, like, networking is an important piece of stuff as well.
Super important.
Obviously, yeah. What you do is important, but, you know, people and relationships, you know, also it's a big component. So that's really cool. And the last one we'll leave the listeners with is a book recommendation. Can be an all-time favorite one you've read, or a recent one, or just anything that comes to your mind.
Oh, that's also a difficult one. The book that I read that impressed me was nothing to do with energy at all. It's called Perfectionist. It's about a chef that is trying to do everything perfectly. It's a bit of a sad story, but overall, you learn a lot about what a competitive industry is and what is the psychology around it to be successful and to be resistant to certain kind of competition, I will say. It was a great book that impressed me about a really perfectionist person. It's a sad story in the end, but I learned a lot through it.
Yeah, no, that's great. Honestly, those are the kind of good ones to take something from it and apply it to your own life. So that's great. Well, again, Hamie, thank you so much. It's been an honor, honestly. Your goal of getting into the IEA with this podcast, it's allowed me contact with people I never thought I'd, you know, come across or be able to meet and truly consider a friend or colleague around the industry. And it's honestly been a goal. You know, one of the ones I set on my list was to get to speak with someone at the IEA. And so having you reach out to include me in, you know, which I couldn't be at the workshop, which was a bummer, but just getting to have you on the show has been an honor. And it's been great to talk with you for the past 40 minutes, and just thank you for your inputs. Thank you for what you're doing for the industry. Thank you for the work the IEA is putting in. And I look forward to seeing what comes out in the coming years, just as you update models and update stuff that comes out. So thank you for your time. It's really been a pleasure.
Thanks a lot, Nick. It was also a pleasure on my side. I'm happy to do this again, maybe in a couple of years to reassess the situation.
Yes, we should absolutely do that. I'll put it on the calendar. But thank you also to all you listeners for being around for the last 4+ years and just supporting the show, and hope you learned something new today. Hope you can take it and share it with someone else. Please like and subscribe to the show and share it with your friends or colleagues. Until next time, I have been your host, Nick Sestari, and this has been another episode of the Core Knowledge Podcast.